Linux Tech Show. The Linux Link Tech Show is on. Your link to the latest in GNU Linux and technology. 2 hours of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter. Free software, free speech, open source, open mics. Live from the Linux Link Tech Show studio, here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link. Link it up, and take it away. Take it away.
Yet another exciting Linux Link Tech Show, episode 144. Welcome.
No, Link. You just say 144, right?
Yes, 144.
Okay, sorry. It sounded like 134. Like, we're back in time once again.
Another exciting episode. We're here. We're not queer. Well, at least I know I'm not queer.
Yeah, that's what you keep
not
telling
us. Not
that
I have a problem with somebody who is queer. That's their issue.
That's what he keeps trying to tell us.
As he secretly has the Meat Puppet site bookmarked.
No, that's not me. I'm not the one who always goes back to that site.
Yeah, oh, there's a whole other list of sites that you really need to check out.
You're sitting closest to the one who does. That's why I'm keeping my back to the door, man.
That's a good idea, man, actually. So how's everybody tonight?
No, yeah, oh, man.
Doing good.
Link is not here. He sent us an email this afternoon. He was saying basically he was moving a whole bunch of heavy, old, ancient computer equipment out of his basement.
Vaxes and mainframes.
Whoever's got vaxes and mainframes in their basement. Well, Link does anyway. And he screwed up his back pretty bad, supposedly. So he's sounds like he's hurting pretty bad, so he's not here tonight. So, Alan...
Hey, is your laptop supposed to be flashing yellow there?
I was running off the battery before.
Oh, okay.
It's just charging up.
Usually that means shutdown on mine, so...
No, it starts beeping if it's going to shut down.
Actually, mine only has like a 5-minute battery life anyway, so...
Yeah. Mine's that much better, so...
It's enough to unplug and shut off.
Yeah, without crashing the system, right?
Yeah.
So, Dan, you got another week of this laptop.
Yes, I do.
Now that you've got it all customized and tweaked out to your liking, it's time to give it back.
Yeah.
And that's what is going to stink.
I want to clarify a few things from last week. Let's start off with that. Again, for those of you who didn't listen to last week's show... Or didn't listen yet. I was graciously given a MacBook by Apple to test out with regards to work and to see how how it's going to fit into our environment. We already have the older OS X machines, the G4s, iBooks, and some eMacs. So they were gracious enough to let us try one of these out because, of course, it's been highly regarded as a wonderful piece of hardware. So I played around with doing different things and last week, and I talked about using Boot Camp and having problems with using Boot Camp.
Then running with Parallels, right?
Yeah, because if you use Boot Camp, you have to have one. You can't partition your drive in anything but one HFS plus journal partition. And when you use Boot Camp, It splits the partition and gives you like almost like a free, it seems like a free partition space, but it does something to the master boot record or the partition table, so that it essentially renders it almost unusable by, you know, because I tried installing Linux on it after that and that wasn't flying. It just wouldn't accept it. For some reason, I had a problem with the partition table, and when I tried splitting that one bulldog partition that Boot Camp allows you to make, I couldn't install Windows with that either. I was having problems. So to make a long story short, I decided to just do the Boot Camp method, use Windows, and then try Ubuntu through Parallels, and Parallels ran really great, and it ran Windows and Ubuntu and OS X all at the same time. So we talked about that last week. I was able to get the machine to dual boot between OS X and Ubuntu that time, if I set up the partition, you know, wiped out everything and then split the partition up manually at the, before I installed OS 10. But once you do that again, you can't use Boot Camp. So I had the brainchild idea to, after using Boot Camp, to go in there and then use Boot with Gparted and split my Windows partition after Windows was installed, mm-hmm. thinking that that might work, and it hosed my partition table again. So I couldn't boot Windows, and Ubuntu wasn't liking it. And I wiped it all out again, and I did the reinstall of OS 10, and I did the Boot Camp method and installed Windows XP, and I actually got it up and working. Then I used Parallels, and I had Ubuntu running under Parallels and Windows XP. And then I came across a posting about that you don't actually need Boot Camp to run Windows on here. It's advisable to use Boot Camp to get the driver disk for Windows, but you can do an installation of OS 10 and then resize the OS 10 partition using the disk util through the terminal. So I tried doing that. I wiped out my Windows XP partition using Boot Camp and set it back to one large partition. But the moment you have Boot Camp touch your disk, it's over. Okay? It does something to it. The disk util would not let me repartition it. So I had to wipe everything out again. And I did a full install of OS 10, and I didn't separate partitions. I then used a disk util, and it's 111 gig hard drive, 110 gig hard drive. I dropped it down to 80 gigs for OS 10, 15 and 15 for Windows and Ubuntu specifically. I installed Windows. That went off without a problem. And after that, I installed Ubuntu, and that went off without a hitch. Now, last week I had mentioned that there is a program that you're going to need to use if you want to use Mac or Linux on the OS X, and that program is called the Refit Project, R-E-F-I-T Project. It's at refit.sourceforge.net. I'll post that in the chat in just a few minutes. And it's a boot menu and maintenance toolkit for the EFI-based machines like the Intel Macs. And it does a really great job. It'll pick up the different operating systems you have installed and theoretically allow you to boot it. So after my installation of Ubuntu today, which went, of course, without a hitch. I mean, it's wild because I'll sit here and I'll install Windows on this thing. And installing Windows takes about 30 minutes to a half an hour. Yeah, 30 minutes to a half an hour. It takes about 30 minutes to 45 minutes, depending on whether I'm paying enough attention to it, because you have to go through the initial boot up of the installation disk, which takes a few minutes. Then you have to run the partitioning tool and then allow it to copy the files to the machine, to the hard drive. Then it reboots. Then it configures this, or sets up the system, asks you a few questions, seems to take forever. Then it reboots. Then you got to install the drivers. Then it reboots. Then you got to install some patches. Then it reboots. You know what I'm talking about. But when I slid the Ubuntu disk in there, it was a dream. I mean, you actually had a fully functioning system when you used that live CD, and you could do whatever you want with it. You can connect to the network, your browser network. It's fully functional. Mm-hmm. You click on that install button. 10 minutes later, it's dropped down on this machine, and I'm booting back into Ubuntu. Really sweet.
Life is sweet.
It is. It is really sweet. But in addition to the Refit application, also you should go over to the BinFalse blog posting I'm going to put up there. It's actually just bin-false.org/P=17. I guess that's post number 17. It's called Installing Ubuntu Linux on a MacBook Dual Boot. It's a really great reference for doing this, and you follow these instructions on here. And like I said, in 15, 20 minutes, you'll be dual boot in OS X and Ubuntu without a problem.
I got a question for you real quick.
Go ahead, shoot it away.
My dad called me when I was walking out the door. He was having a problem printing. So once I came back here, I accessed his machine remotely. I'm in the box right now from here. I restarted Cups. What's the command line to push a document out to the printer?
LPR.
It's LPR, the file name, and then the printer name, right?
Yeah. LPR. No, it's LPR space dash capital P, the name of the printer. And then
the file name.
Then the file name. If there's only one printer on there...
It's the device name, right? It's a local USB, and it's like dev USB, LP0. So it would be LPR-P/dev/USB/LP0, then the file name, right?
That sounds right, yeah.
Let me give it a shot.
Although, if it's the only printer, I think just putting LPR space file name would work.
Let's try that. Let's try that first. Now, how do I access the print queue from the command line? It's LPR.
You could do LP. I think you do LPQ.
LPQ.
I think you can. You should be able
to. I see it. Yep. I see it. It's out there.
Is it printing? What's he running?
It says active.
Is it using the latest Ubuntu?
No, it's one back.
Oh, okay.
I see it. It says the printer's ready and printing. I see the document in the queue.
Is it printing? It
doesn't say. It says rank active, owner root, job number, then the file name.
Uh-oh. Where's your dad live?
Why?
You might be taking a trip out there soon.
No.
Guess who's going on a road trip?
Yeah. Bah, bah, bah. Now, the only problem I'm having right now is after I installed Ubuntu, it's not letting me get into Windows XP because Lilo has taken it over. And I don't know why it's not letting me get into my Windows XP partition. I had to figure that out.
Did you rerun Lilo?
Yeah, I did. I did, okay. And I must have something wrong in my setup, and I don't know why. It's been so long. I'm so used to using Grub. I'm so used to not having to do this. You know what I mean? Crazy. And on similar note with Ubuntu,
Lilo's good enough for Pat. It's good enough for me.
There you go.
Actually, I've been running with Grub on all my systems now.
I think you meant Pat Volkerding.
Oh, yeah. Pat Volkerding. Okay. Sorry.
Mr. Slacker, you know?
I'm not the Pat 2 feet away from him.
Yeah, you're not good enough. Where's your distribution,
I'm
Pat?
I'm not in his heart.
You didn't... obviously, neither of you guys showed up at the LUG meeting last night, which is unfortunate.
I was cleaning out my mother-in-law's house still, so...
Which was unfortunate because a couple of guys from the 2600 group showed up.
That's
and
cool.
They're doing some really cool projects.
Where do they meet up over here?
They're over on they used to meet up off MacArthur Road, but I don't think they do anymore.
I didn't pick up where they said they were meeting, but they said that it used to be like 6 to 8 guys, but now there's like 40 members.
That's pretty good, man.
So it's growing.
Yeah, I went up there. Well, this is a couple of years ago. They used to meet up at a Panera Bread up on MacArthur Road, and there was quite a lot of people there.
Yeah. So. What?
Nine. There's quite a lot of people there.
Yeah, it was nice that they showed up, and it sparked some interest in members of the LUG to start heading over there, checking them out, do some hardware hacking. They're playing around with the WRT project, but not...
The router.
Not the project of writing their own software.
Okay.
Because they want to do a little... They want to have a little more flexibility than WRT. So if you're interested in that, you know, definitely give them a holler, check them out. What were you just saying before? Because I had another reason for bringing that up about the LUG meeting. We were talking right after Grub. If it's good enough for you, Pat didn't
good
show
for
up.
Pat Volkerding.
Good enough for Pat. And then something else was brought up, and I wanted to bring... Because it came up at the LUG meeting.
Bad short-term memory here.
too many bong hits, Alan.
Yeah,
that could be
too
a
many
problem.
Bum hits.
No, bong.
Speaking of bong hits, I am really surprised at the amount of videos and TV shows that are showing up on YouTube that you can actually watch. I'm really surprised, and
eventually they'll all get taken off. But
that's I don't know. That's I think that's really cool, and I wish that they wouldn't take it off. Because then I can't watch it. Some of those stuff. I heard that the first pilot episode of Khorgoth the Barbarian. Did you see that?
Yes, I did.
I missed the pilot episode.
I'll get you a copy of it. But I still have it over on the Mythbox.
I saw the next episode, and I was like,
"Well, the next
I
one was the
it.
Same. The next one was the same one as the pilot, I think." because I have two of them on there. One of them says Pilot, and one of them just says the name of it.
I thought the Pilot was an hour long. Well, this is the one where they, where those guys went to the bar.
Yeah.
And they went to the wrong bar. They wanted
initially,
to go to
yeah.
the, what was it? And they ended up at the wrong bar. Was that?
I'll get you a copy of it. And you can tell me if it's because I didn't look at the same one because I went 2 minutes into it and then it was like, oh, this is the same one. So I just
they had to go to the floating Wizard's Tower.
Yeah,
the Wizard's floating tower. I love that. And I'm like, I looked at my TiVo.
That, you know, that has almost like the same exact look as like the old Mad cartoons.
Yeah,
all those people have that like completely flat face and squared off. I was like, is this? It looks like it's drawn by the same people who did Mad.
Yeah, it was. I really loved it. I hope they come out with more episodes because TiVo said there aren't any coming up, and that ticks me off.
I've got it set up on Myth to, you know, record it anytime it finds it. So
that's it, Myth. Are you using Not Myth?
Right now, I'm not using it. No, I had it running on a test hard drive, and it was working pretty good.
Because that's how I set it up. And there's a guy, one of the guys that comes from up northeast. I think he's actually in Jersey. He knows somebody that's looking to start putting together like multimedia boxes and selling them. And he was looking at doing Not Myth.
I have some thoughts on relating to that.
So maybe you want to, you know, probably
come to a meeting one of these days.
Maybe. it's tough, man. Sometimes.
Because I thought you really liked Not Myth.
I'm really into Myth TV and the whole deal. The whole thing with putting together and selling a Myth TV box, people have done it. I really think there's like a price point where it would sell. And I think that price is pretty low. I don't see people spending more than like $250 for a dedicated Myth box, $300 tops. And if you can't hit that price point, I don't think it's worth the do. Like I've seen people with startup companies doing Myth TV boxes, selling them, and they sell for $500, $600, $700. That's a lot of money.
It is.
It's got to be competitive with a TiVo, you know.
Yeah, I can see what you're saying, but on the flip side, there's the Windows Media Edition.
There's also Sage TV.
Does that do anything with Sage TV?
Sage TV is a standalone thing that it runs on Windows, and it also have a Linux version as well. And it's basically the same thing as Myth TV, except it's a commercial product. And I think they charge, $30 or $40. And it is, like I said, there's a Linux version. And I think it's like a whole dedicated install, kind of like the same way Not Myth works, where you just pop in the CD and installs. Takes over the whole machine kind of deal.
Uh-huh.
But they charge you for it. I mean, why would you spend $30, $40 if Not Myth sets up everything?
Yeah.
The only thing I thought that would be a problem with using Not Myth is the Zapit subscription.
No, it works with that.
No, I know it works,
but
there's a license involved in that, isn't there? Or
no.
You can't.
You basically, every 3 months.
You got
to. I think it's every 3 months. You have to go log into their website and you answer like 3 questions.
Yeah.
But no, what I'm saying is you can't. The person who gets the box would have to sign up for that. You can't install it.
You can't have it go along with it
because of the license.
You got to register before you do the install.
So that's the only hang up I could see with that.
So when you do the install, you see the little section where it asks for the Zap to it. You put your login ID and your password, and then it'll go in and pull down your information. You need to do that ahead of time because you need to select what area and what cable system or what satellite system you have set up.
Yeah.
So once you get into the install and you pop in the Zaptuit ID and password, it's going to go into Zaptuit and pull down all your programming information. So you need to have that all pre-configured before you even do the setup on your machine.
So I'm wondering how commercially that's going to work, because somebody can't just come in and buy one and go home with it. Because
you'd have to set up a script beforehand, you know, like the first thing that when you log in, the first thing it does is go out and, you know, go to the Zapit site and, you know, make you get an account.
Right.
But I thought you said that during the installation of Not Myth.
Not Myth. You need it.
Yeah. So if they were going to use Not Myth, then they got a problem.
Yeah. Like what Alan was describing, have a script set up, say, using maybe curl.
Yeah.
It'll go into the website. You know, pass the commands to the website thinking that someone's actually going through a browser and pop in the ID and the password that way.
Something like that, yeah. Well, I mean, it wouldn't be that difficult to do something like that.
It's doable, I mean.
Yeah, well, that's just a thought maybe you want to...
Or you can just be like a real man and just compile it all yourself.
Yeah, I guess it, see, that's the thing. If you're going to really go down that route, you probably want to do something similar to that. You know, compile it yourself.
It's not that hard. It's more, there's little things that catch you up. But, you know, the overall program is very simple. You know, it's simple to compile. You know, it's like, you know, four or five different modules, and that's about it. It's the little things, like, you know, getting the IVTV driver set up properly.
Right.
Which actually, on a 2.6 kernel, was flawless. It's trying to do it back on a 2.4 that was a bit of a pain.
But, you know,
tiny things. Making sure that you've got, like, transcode and stuff compiled before you try to, like, get some of the other modules to work, like the plugins. You've got to make sure you have all the little extras working that the plugins need before the plugins compile.
Yeah, I get the impression, though, that the person that's looking into doing this really isn't that into, might not be that into Linux.
Well, in that case, like I said, then Nomyth is the excellent version to go with.
Yeah, for dedicated box man, you can't beat it.
Yeah. Like, the only thing, you know, with mine, the only thing I'm not totally sure if it works
God
is
man,
to
I have Windows
the,
XP back on here now.
I thought I heard that bong before. Yeah. Now, the only thing I'm not sure that works on mine is the S-Video out. And that's because it's not operating near a TV. So I didn't compile. I didn't set it up to work with that.
You need to set up a frame buffer device.
Yeah, it's not a big deal to do. I just don't have. I wasn't using it like that. I've got an Xbox sitting on top of the TV that'll work fine with it. Once I get rid of my little database problem that I have that I got to call Link for. But
dude, you had that database problem like 3 weeks ago. Do you want me to tell you what you do?
No, I just have to have time to do the damn thing. That's the problem.
I'm gonna cry.
Oh, don't cry.
Speaking of TV shows,
I'm not overly. I'm not crying about it. You shouldn't either.
Any of you guys watch the 4400 on USA Network? That's a cool show, man. It's produced by some people from Star Trek, and I think a couple X-Files people. It's a really good show. Just started up its second season. I forget, but it's a real cool show. If you get a chance, check it out on USA. It's on Sunday nights at 9 o'clock.
Okay.
It kind of reminds
me. I'm well in bed by then, but.
Oh, that's right. You're an old man.
Well, 4 o'clock in the morning comes real soon.
This isn't good.
What's the matter? You got an error?
I'm blue screening on my Windows XP partition now.
Oh, yeah. Get the picture of the blue screen on the Mac.
Yeah, I should. Look, it's a blue screen on a Mac. That's pretty cool. It's ticking me off. Hey, I wonder if I absolutely need that. That table in there for you have a table, it says, right?
Yeah, it's I forget what it actually says now.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I actually need
mine. Says table equals /dev/HDA. Your mileage may vary though,
but it doesn't like when I do that. The same as your boot, right? Your boot equals
no, my boot is. /dev/HDA1. Table is /dev/HDA.
Huh. Because mine is... My boot is /dev/SDA. But I don't have a table... I don't know. Maybe there's a little snafu in my plan here.
Dun, dun, dun.
Superior Apple product. What are you guys thinking about doing a special episode of Apple Elitist Radio?
Yeah, I thought about that.
We could do some really good stuff with that. I have some ideas.
You know what I absolutely hate? I absolutely hate this website called Experts Exchange.
Never heard of it.
Have you ever?
It only gives you the questions, and then you have to log in and pay for the answers.
Yes. And it
shows up on every Google search you do.
I know. You're like, oh, here's my exact question I have. It's only $9.95 to hear the answer. No, I'll find it somewhere else. I hate that. Ticks me off. And if you hate it too, let me know. I'd be interested to hear what you have to say. Yes.
Excuse me.
Hopefully our guest won't have a problem connecting.
He's just instant messaging. He's having trouble calling in. And he gave me his number. We can call him at.
Okay.
Remember to mute it this time.
Yeah.
Oh, I...
You're butchering it, Dan. You're butchering it. Can you see this?
Which dot do I hit? No.
I'm not there yet. Oh, okay.
Let me know when you're ready.
Actually, no, we shouldn't hum that. We could, like, get charged for it.
Oh, wait.
That's right.
Eight. Oh, okay. It looks like it's good. If I mute it, I don't know if I'll be able to hear. Wait. I can't tell whether I mute it. Oh. This VNC thing's not working the way I want it to. All right. You guys ready?
Yep, let's do it.
Let's give him a ring. Who are we talking to tonight, Pat?
Max Bevick from the Fedora Project.
Awesome. Give us some words.
Hello?
Go ahead. No. I want to mute it, but it's not. And now I can't find. Okay, here we go. No. Nope. I'm ruining this show.
It's going in the toilet, Dan. What the hell are you doing?
I know. It's
You're
terrible.
Killing the show.
Wait a minute. This isn't... I got to find out what desktop I'm on.
Dan's got like 20 machines all hooked up to the same monitor. He's got three VNC sessions going.
And then my mouse keeps disappearing.
Which window do I work in today?
Yeah, where am I? Okay. Now,
well, I'm looking forward to talking to Max, man. Fedora Core 5 is pretty nice.
There we go.
I just noticed a really noticeable drop in volume.
Yeah, but we're still streaming out, and it's because this background noise fell off. And why all of a sudden is the volume so low?
It's really noticeable.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Why does mute? Can you explain that to me, Alan? Why does muting the microphone on that machine over there drag the volume down?
Now it's back up.
Why is that?
Shouldn't.
That doesn't make any sense.
Do you want me to just pull the volume, the level down over here, and you can, like, use it normally? We just have to make sure we turn it up real quick.
Oh, here. Let me just mute it, and I'll dial it, and it'll be all good.
No, that does it really good. That actually shouldn't do that because that's a separate channel.
Thought a fat load of good that did.
Yeah, turn it back up.
Damn it, now I lost.
It's ringing.
Hey, guys.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, Max, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
Everyone, we've got Max Bevick from the Fedora Core Project. Welcome to the show, Max.
How are you?
Excellent.
Thanks. I'm hanging out in your IRC channel as well, but I imagine while we're talking, I won't be able to type in there. So.
No, go ahead. You could, if you want to, or unless you can't talk and type at the same time.
We get distracted all the time.
In fact, we could just have a lot of dead air, and we could all just type in the IRC.
50 minutes straight of just typing on the keys.
I'm having a bit of trouble hearing you.
Yeah, we got, you know what? We had somebody say that today. Can you hear me okay?
I'm here. It's very bumpy. I can hear you only because I can sort of make out what you're saying as you're saying it.
Maybe it's the bandwidth that's getting eaten up.
Let me try and adjust the microphone.
See, there, I have no idea what you just said.
It might not be the microphone. It could be our provider.
Let me see here. Hold on.
See if we go fix it. Well. That's really loud.
Is that any better?
No, it's a lot worse, actually. There's a lot of feedback.
You're distorting.
Okay, I got rid of that. Is that any better for you?
How about now?
I'm sorry, not really.
We've got a crappy connection through Broad Voice.
Let me call you right back, okay?
Sure, absolutely.
Let me see if I can get a better... Let me try that. Hold on. You know what I'll try and do? Why don't I try Skype? See if that's any better. Huh?
Give Skype a call. Because it's only... He's the only one coming in. It should be all right.
Okay. Let me write his phone number down. And I'll pass it out to all you guys.
Want me to write it down for you?
Yeah, go ahead and write it down so I can get the... What's going on with the asterisk? Alright. Alright, sorry people. I know we get hate mail for this.
Yeah.
How idiots. How unprofessional.
You guys suck.
Jerks. Fools.
Yeah, everybody get on the BinRev stream. You shouldn't be on the TLTS stream at all.
No, they can be on the TLTS stream.
They should get off, man.
But it doesn't matter.
No, they can't. They shouldn't be on the Linux link.
Not the Linux link, but...
We actually should take that one off the front page. Because that is like the first one on there.
Is this going to go beep?
Probably.
No, see, it doesn't go beep.
What are you trying to do, calling through Skype?
Yeah.
Just to see?
Let's see if that...
Skype out is free now, isn't it?
Alan. I don't have enough. I'm concerned that when I do this, it's going to... Oh, I forget. You got to do a plus, don't you?
Yes. Plus. Was it plus one?
Yeah.
Survey says...
Ring-a-dingy.
Ring-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding- fantastic.
Alan ruined our asterisk box again.
No, I didn't. I didn't touch it at all. I'm not even sure which machine in here in this room it even is.
Thank you for your patience.
No problem. I'm glad to be on with you guys.
And we're glad to have you. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Where would you like to begin?
We're going to start right at the beginning.
Okay.
What was your first computer?
Let's see. I got my first computer when I was in fifth grade. So I guess I was probably, I don't know, either 9 or 10 years old. My family happened to be living in Hong Kong at the time. And it was a 286. I don't even know where it came from. It sort of just showed up one day because some friends of ours, we were all sort of getting computers for our families, and this thing showed up, and I was the only one of me and my parents who knew how to do anything with it. And in an ironic twist of fate that I now work on Linux, one of my first memories of using that computer was mucking around in DOS one day and managing to absolutely delete almost everything related to Windows completely on accident.
Nice.
Do you still have your first computer?
As a matter of fact, I believe it's in a garage somewhere in my parents' house, sitting around, but that's about all I can say about it right now.
Yeah, you never get rid of that first computer.
The old VIC-20.
The TI-99-4A.
Trash 80s.
And Alan, it was an abacus.
Slide rule.
Slide rule. Actually, I have a slide rule. I found a slide rule my mother-in-law's. I'm trying to learn how to use it.
So now,
just because.
Now, from fifth grade or sixth grade all the way to now, and now you're in the Fedora project.
There you go.
Amazing.
I'll tell you what. I've been with Red Hat since August of 2004. I've been working on the Fedora project full-time since probably February of this year. And I absolutely love working on Fedora. It's just a fantastic way to spend my days. It's really just so much fun working with the community, working with the whole world, really, to try to promote open source and the whole message of open source. And I really try to look at myself as an advocate of the whole open source idea, even more so than Fedora or any other distribution specifically, because I think that we're all trying to shoot for the same goals.
So now, you still work for Red Hat?
I do, yes.
And your job at Red Hat is to work on the Fedora project?
Yeah, I my job at Red Hat is to lead up the Fedora project from the Red Hat side of the world, right? Fedora, as we all know, but just in case there's some people out there who don't really understand quite what it is. Fedora is it's a Linux distribution. It's a set of projects, much like some other open source kind of groups have going on. But the Fedora distribution itself is built partially by developers who pull a paycheck from Red Hat. A tremendous amount of work on it is also done by open source community members, people who work for other companies, you know, the standard sort of open source methodology. The Fedora project is run by a project board, which has 9 people on that board, about 50-50 split between folks who are employed by Red Hat and non-Red Hat open source community members. And my position in Red Hat is to be the chairman of that Fedora project board. So I lead that up. I try to oversee what's going on as much as I can on the development of Fedora Core, Fedora Extras, making sure that we're making progress in marketing issues around Fedora, budget, legal issues, doing things like this, interviews and press, all those different areas around Fedora ultimately fall underneath my view, but of course there's many very talented people who help on all that stuff.
How many people does Red Hat actually have working on the Fedora Core project actively?
Well, it's hard to say exactly because, especially from the development perspective, a lot of our developers work on code that is in Fedora. They work on code that also goes from Fedora into RHEL, Red Hat Enterprise Linux. So they're kind of spread around. Full time working only on Fedora. Off the top of my head, I would say it's probably maybe something like 10 people who I would say spend all their time just working on Fedora. We've got other people. If you were to look in Fedora Extras at the list of packages and who maintains those packages, you'll see we've got tons of packages that are maintained by people within Red Hat, and tons of packages maintained outside of Red Hat. So there's a lot of Red Hat developers who maintain packages for Fedora Extras. There's a lot of Red Hat developers who maintain packages for Fedora Core, but that's not their sole job responsibility.
So then, one of the things that we hear a lot regarding the open source movement and when you have the community involved is invariably you end up with really critical pieces of the operating system or, you know, the software, whatever, that people don't really want to hack on. You know, they say people contribute into the interesting projects or something that, you know, is like, you know, contributing to the GIMP is a lot more interesting than, let's say, writing a module for a USB flash device that might be a little funky or something like that. But there's core critical parts that the community just doesn't have an interest in picking up. Is that where, you know, Red Hat would step in? Your team and
that's a big part of it. I don't want to say that that's all of it, but I think what we see, and you said it very well, what we see a lot in open source development is that a lot of the nitty gritty and some of the less sexy, so to speak, pieces of the projects need a lot of focus that doesn't always come from the community. Of course, the fact that Red Hat has the ability to throw money at that problem, so to speak, by hiring developers and making it part of people's jobs to get certain bits of code written is a big area where we can help with that. But we see Red Hat also contributing right on the forefront of a lot of the really new and exciting stuff going on, such as the work going on in Zen that went into Fedora Core 5, that'll end up in Fedora Core 6, and also in Red Hat Enterprise 5. So we have a balance there, but definitely one of the good things about having Red Hat behind the Fedora project is the fact that we can get people to work on things that otherwise might not happen because it's their job to do so.
Okay, cool. Now you're on the fifth release of Fedora just came out a little while ago,
March
actually.
20th.
Was it March?
March 20th.
Yeah, March 20th, and had a lot of praise for it. And you guys seem to be coming along really well with the project.
Well, thank you. I'm very, very proud of Fedora Core 5, and I will be the first to say that I didn't have a whole lot to do with it. Like I said, I started my job on Fedora in February. I'd been working on Red Hat Network prior to that, and I just have to give all the credit to the developers who work on Fedora, the folks out there in the community who, you know, built up Fedora extras, the testers, everybody. Fedora Core 5 is fantastic, and I hope we can make Fedora Core 6 just as good.
Now, could you explain to us, you know, in a nutshell then, what is the primary difference between Fedora and then RHEL?
Sure. Absolutely. They have... I'll begin by saying it this way. They have vastly different target audiences. Fedora is always stood at the forefront of sort of the emerging technology in the open source world. Fedora is the place where Red Hat really does its innovation, plays with new technology. Fedora's motto, we always say, is a rapid progress of free and open source software. We release the Fedora Core hopefully twice a year, and we're always trying to pull in the newest things and see what is developing out there in the open source community, what we are developing as well, and giving back to the community, pulling that all together into Fedora, and it becomes the OS for the early adopters, for the enthusiasts. Those are the kind of people who tend to come to Fedora. Now, I see Fedora also being run in production environments all over the place, and that's fantastic. And we're glad that it is of high enough quality that people feel comfortable doing that. And that thrills me, but we don't necessarily try to get people to do that. If they want to, that's great. RHEL, on the other hand, has a much longer release cycle. We only release it, every year and a half to 2 years, we do a release of RHEL. And the biggest difference is that RHEL is... that's what Red Hat sells to make its money, right? We sell support for RHEL. We sell training for RHEL, various other things around that. Fedora, we don't sell Fedora. Fedora is perfectly free, obviously, always will be, always has been. How's that for a start? What can I add to that? What other questions do you have?
So you basically, it seems like Fedora and Red Hat, they're targeting kind of two audiences here. You have the business... and commercial sector that is going to go for the RHEL, and then you have the those. I don't want to say Fedora. I don't want to limit Fedora by saying it's not something that a new Linux user who just wanted to play around with it at home would try out. But it doesn't seem like that. It's what a lot of people just come into Linux really kind of jump towards. So is Fedora kind of targeting the existing Linux community and hoping to acquire, you know, a nice user base but a lot of developers? Is that what the Fedora has in mind, that it's not trying to be kind of a distribution that someone just getting into Linux would want to jump onto?
Let me sort of take a couple angles at that. First of all, to your second point, obviously we're trying to make Fedora a distribution that Linux users and developers would want to work on and code on, and Fedora also serves, I should have said this in the previous question, but Fedora really is, in my mind, sort of an upstream of RHEL. If you want to, that's a really good way to sort of think about it for people who want sort of just a one-sentence understanding. I would answer the rest of your question by asking you my own, which is, what about Fedora makes you feel like it isn't necessarily something that new users would come to as opposed to other distributions? Because I wouldn't say that we're building it specifically to try to get those people, but I wouldn't say that we're not either.
No, okay, I guess...
So I wonder where you think Fedora gets that reputation from, so we could see about doing something about that reputation.
You know what, I'm not saying that Fedora has that reputation, or I'm not singling out Fedora as compared to, say, Ubuntu or what's another distribution? See, because it's hard to say. Like, Ubuntu and Fedora, I kind of see on a similar line there, because the other distributions where I would say that someone just coming to Linux might be interested in would be something like Mandriva or SUSE or Linspire. And the reason why I think of that, because I'm thinking in my head, well, if they go out, they can see it on a shelf. They could actually buy it. So that's one step towards making it easier for them to install. And I'm thinking to myself, well, if, you know, the Fedora project, if somebody was looking for kind of support, a home user might be looking for support, would Red Hat be willing to give them support for that, or are they going to say, no, you need to go with the RHEL
Enterprise desktop
project?
I see exactly what you're saying. No, Red Hat as an entity does not offer or sell support for Fedora. The support for Fedora comes from the community, comes from our list, it comes from our forums, it comes from our IRC. So in that sense, I understand what you're saying, where someone isn't going to just wander into a store, pick up a Fedora. Red Hat had its time when people wandered into stores and bought the disks and the boxes off the shelf, and it turned out that that wasn't necessarily the best way to make a sustainable company, and that's what led to Red Hat Enterprise Linux and what led to Fedora as well in the state that it is now. I see what you're saying, where someone wouldn't just sort of stumble into Fedora without being introduced to it by someone who's already a Linux user and was going to help people make a conversion into open source software. So I'll agree with you there.
So then, one of the things that it sounded like you were edging towards when I had you ask the question in a convoluted way before was that you would like to see Fedora being adopted by new Linux users and accessible to anybody, so to speak. And one of the things I'm wondering is if you wanted to push Fedora out there like that, and you look at the support offerings, which are wonderful, the online support is wonderful, and it's the same thing like I'm thinking about here with Ubuntu, the online support is phenomenal, but someone who's just coming into this is curious, may not be used to online support like that. So I'm wondering if there's any, you know, possible plans for putting something together, kind of like what SUSE has. If you buy their box product for the desktop, what a home user would use, you can get, like, what is it, 30 or 100 days of support or something like that. It comes with it for, some limited support. Is there any plans for doing that? And I guess that would roll into, are there any plans for supporting Red Hat on the home user end of things, or are they just strictly business?
Uh-huh. Well, in terms of a more formalized sort of support for Fedora, there aren't any plans for that right now. If the Fedora board were to decide that it felt like that was one of the most important things for the Fedora project on a whole to take action on, then we would see what we could do about that. Right now, I don't think there's anything in the works to change the way we are supporting Fedora. The second part of your question was basically Red Hat and its desktop strategy, so to speak. I quite honestly, because I don't want to get myself into any trouble, I'm not the right person to talk about that in any sort of way that would be official about Red Hat. It's not really my area, but I would say that personally, I would love to see Linux be able to get onto all sorts of desktops. I use it on my laptop. I use it on my workstation. I see what the problems are. I think when we talk about Fedora as a desktop, one of the complaints we hear a lot, or not complaints, but one of the threads that constantly comes up on our lists or in talks we give at things like Linux World, one of the things we are always hearing about is the issues of playing music, playing DVDs, the standard sort of problems that we always hear again and again about proprietary drivers, that sort of stuff. And I think Fedora has always taken a very clear view that we don't want to have anything that isn't free and open source in our distribution. And that is an ideological choice that we've made again and again, even though it means things like MP3s aren't going to work out of the box and such. And that is probably a deterrent to some extent for a less technical user to come to a Linux desktop via Fedora, because they're going to want to play their music and it's not going to just work and they're going to be confused and they're going to be angry. But we, in making that choice, I think we're holding to the ideals that we believe in. And what we hope instead is that we can get things like Ogg to continue to gain traction. Chris Montgomery, the guy behind Ziff, has been working at Red Hat. I don't know if you guys know it or not. He's a Red Hat employee. So Red Hat supports those sorts of things, but we in the Fedora world, we choose to kind of keep our stance around the ideology. I know that was not exactly the answer to the question you asked, but I'm trying to improvise.
No, you know what? And we were going to eventually probably roll into that area of things with the multimedia support and all that. And I mean, it's great that you guys support the free and open source software and don't want any closed, or will not put any closed source software in there. And you know, I think that's great, and almost that's required by every Linux distribution, if I'm not mistaken. In order to distribute it, you can't really include any closed software.
Possibly. So different distributions go in slightly different angles around it. We take a very ideologically stance, I suppose.
So then
I can't say from my own experience. I haven't looked at every single distribution to see exactly where they stand on that same issue. But I would hope that most of them would stand in the same place that we do.
Well, okay, let me. Here comes a loaded question, and you don't have you don't have to answer this if you're not comfortable answering it. But my question for you is do you yourself use like Flash and do DVD playback on your systems, and use MP3 playback?
I don't watch DVDs on my. Because I have a DVD player and I watch them on there.
Okay.
I have MP3s, but of course that's a DVD player is no less evil, so to speak, than anything else, right?
Right.
Yeah, I have a DVD player. I have MP3s on my computer. They're on there. They've been transferred into OGG files, but I do have MP3 files around. And yes, I do have Flash installed in my browser. Those are unfortunate realities, and if that draws some heat from different folks, I don't think that makes me or anyone else who uses those things a hypocrite. I think it means that we are doing what we can in the ways we can to try to promote the openness, but it's a reality that it's not there yet, and until it is, some amount of interaction with that sort of stuff is necessary. I'm talking to you on a cell phone. My cell phone isn't open source, but I still have one. If you want to take that argument all the way through, it almost becomes something like that eventually. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Well, my next question for you was going to be, and you know what, I agree with you right there. As much as I would love to just be, you know, Theora, Aug, and
100% free, it's not really realistic.
Ganesh, right, it's really tough because then, you know, it almost becomes like a selfish. You know, somebody could look at it and say, well, you're being selfish because you want to look at sites with Flash or you want to, you know, watch a DVD on your Linux system. You know, that's not the way it goes. But I guess what I was going to roll into saying next is we see that a lot with a lot of distributions, Fedora, Ubuntu, particularly ones with a really strong community standing, out of the box are strictly, you know, open source, free software, and they shy away from closed software and commercial software, and you have to go through a few extra steps in order to get that software. But yet it seems like the majority of the people that use this, or at least the majority of people that I come in contact with, go ahead and go that avenue of getting the closed software. So are you want to make it an individual choice as opposed to a distribution choice?
I think that's a good way of saying it. If somebody wants to go, if a Fedora user wants to go to Fluendo, which offers the ability to get the MP3 support legally and all that other stuff, they can do that, and it'll work just fine. But we're not going to go and set that relationship up ourselves because we don't. There's no reason to do anything that will increase the stranglehold of proprietary or closed standards or formats when what we should be doing is phasing them out and as much as possible. You know, people still send me occasionally Microsoft Word documents, which fortunately OpenOffice can open them, but that doesn't mean that I continue to produce Microsoft Word documents to spread around the internet myself, right? I try to only push out things that are in an open format. So, individual choice. I think it's fine, and that's what all the freedom that we all talk about is anyway, right? So
there you go. That is true. That is true. And I guess, you know, the only other argument I could see to that is that's once again when we come back to the new user finds it frustrating that you know, that the choice is left up to them to go out and get this on their own, and it's not just handed to them on a silver DVD or CD.
I think a lot of it when it comes to new users, I think the thing that's being missed sometimes in the discussion is that new users need to be educated as to what the difference is between different formats and codecs, what the difference between an MP3 and an AUG. I think there's a lot of new users coming into the tech world and whatever operating system they're coming into who they don't know what these things are. It's just something that they were given and told to use. I would be interested to see what you guys think about this idea. What if you had someone who installs Fedora, copies a bunch of MP3s over to their new Fedora partition, and then they double-click on one of them, expecting it to play, and obviously it's not going to, but instead of doing nothing, what if it were to pop up a page in your browser that explained in relatively simple terms what's this whole deal with MP3s, and what is AUG, and then offered that user a few options and sort of laid out the next steps to that user, so they're not lost, but they're also being educated as to why certain things are happening. I think that sort of transparency into why decisions are made is a very powerful thing, and it empowers users to understand why things are happening and then make a decision to affect behavior, understanding why that decision was made.
And you know what? I think that is light years better than it just throwing up an error message or telling you that it can't play this file. You're missing a codec. I think that right there would be light years ahead of what happens now when you double click on it, an MP3, then you don't have the support. So that's a good idea.
Yeah, I there's a couple of us bumping around Red Hat who want to try to get something like that in that sort of functionality into Fedora sooner rather than later.
And yeah, and that's the thing. This I love the Theora and the Aug, and it's such a wonderful, you know, wonderful codec to use, and it's great that it's free. It's getting the content providers to start supporting this. I mean, when the number one portable multimedia player does not support Aug, it makes it difficult for content providers to deliver Aug format.
Yeah, well, I listened earlier today to the interview you guys did with Mark Shuttleworth 2 weeks ago, because I wanted to sort of get a feel for your show and have a sense of what I was getting myself into. And you guys talked about that a little bit with him also, and I don't remember exactly what he said, but he spoke about the general inevitability, right, of openness, and how the open standards and the open way and the open source ideals will eventually prove themselves to be right by virtue of the fact that they are better. And so sooner or later, it's going to happen. And it's just a matter of continuing to make that happen as fast as possible.
And I guess, you know, we bring it right back to Fedora. If you look at the Fedora project, that's a shining example of that philosophy. Because, I mean, you know, Red Hat sponsors the Fedora project, basically making their entire operating system and pack distribution, you know, transparent, but yet they're not losing revenue from it. They're gaining revenue in the long run.
Yeah, well, Fedora, like I said, Fedora represents an upstream for RHEL, and it also represents an upstream for the distributions that are built on top of Fedora. It represents an upstream for distributions that are built off of RHEL. Obviously, there's, you know, we all know there's lots of people who take their RHEL sourced RPMs and rebuild them to do all sorts of things, and so Fedora continues to sort of be upstream of all of that. And I think it's important. It's two things here. I think the first is, I think it's important to expand the things that Fedora is an upstream of. I think if you look around in the K-12 LPSP, and Mark Shuttleworth was talking about this as well, but if you look at K-12 LPSP, there's some stuff in that area that is using Ubuntu. There's some stuff in that area that's also using Fedora. We're trying to work with those folks to help bring as much of what they're doing into the Fedora project as possible. If you look at Planet Karma out at Stanford, we're trying to work with them to get their stuff into Fedora as well, and sort of allow Fedora to continue to be this open kind of open federator for projects. My other point was.
That's all right. If you think about it, you could just chime in with it at any time. But since we're talking about closed software, right, closed stuff, let's roll right into the driver issue here, closed drivers. And one of the most two outstanding examples of closed drivers have been wireless cards and getting accelerated video support on the video cards, like NVIDIA's closed source driver, ATI's drivers that were closed source. You know, SUSE's been really pushing forward with XGL, and I guess what you guys are working on, AIGLX?
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah, go ahead.
How does the AIGLX project mesh with the ideals of keeping it open and free software in the face of binary accelerated graphics card drivers?
Well, that's an interesting question, and you're bumping up a little bit to an area that I'm not too familiar with, which is regrettable. I wish I was. I think let me try to answer your question as much as I can. I think that you look at, when you look at things like wireless drivers, I think, or video drivers, or whatever kind of drivers you're talking about, I think we want to hope that people will make their drivers open and open source and all of that stuff. I think in places where they're not doing that, that is where Fedora, I don't mean to say Fedora, that's where the open source community comes in and tries to take care of it. I don't know how related to your question this is, but looking at things like GCJ as a great example of that, right? Sun still refuses to open source Java, but we've got open source projects like GCJ and ClassPath that are attempting to route around that problem. I don't know enough about AIGLX, I'm sorry to say, to tell you if that is a similar sort of thing to the video card problem, so maybe you guys can help me out here since I'm clearly floundering.
You know what? I know more about the XGL than I know about the AIGL.
Yeah, I personally, I haven't even looked at AIGL. I've played with a little of the XGL stuff and comp is on SUSE. I mean, it's nice eye candy, but I don't know. I really don't think it's that.
There's functionality there, boy.
Know,
there's functionality there.
I shut it off after 2 days. It was giving me a headache. It's pretty, you know, but...
Right. Well, you know, it's probably another year and a half off that it really starts making it big in distributions. But, hey, you know what? Max, you answered the question fair enough.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, we're just dragging you over to Kohl's here, though.
No, that's fine. You know what? I need to brush up on that little piece of stuff anyway, and maybe we can talk about it next time.
Hey, cool. Yeah, no problem. It changed a little bit of focus instead of us beating you over the head with some of these, like, really, controversial, flame-baiting questions. You go into work every day. You work for Red Hat. You work on a Fedora project. What is a day like in the life of Max?
Sure. That's a fun question. That's a fun question to answer. I don't think I am that atypical of most other kind of computer geeks. Hopefully a day in the life of Max doesn't involve getting to the office before 9:30. it also doesn't usually involve turning off the laptop before probably 1 o'clock in the morning or so. I spent my first couple years out of college and my first year and a half at Red Hat as a QA engineer. So all the things that come along with that, testing, test plans, writing, automated test code, all that kind of stuff. So that's sort of where I came to the tech world from. My degree is in computer science. The Fedora job that I do is, for me, a big transition, because it's not a pure engineering job anymore. It's more of a project leadership job, whatever you want to call it, in that vein. I spend my days trying to... What's a funny way to say it? I don't know. I spend my days trying to solve people's problems and trying to enable leadership, really. Because we've got grand ideas of things that we would love to see done, and we get a lot of stuff done, but more than anything else, what we need is people who have the skills and desire to be leaders, whether that's inside of Red Hat, whether that's in the community of open source. We need those people, and we need to find them, and we need to enable them to do things, and we need to give them the support and the help that they need, and then we need to get out of the way. And that is basically what I try to do. In running the Fedora project board, I try to set the agenda for our meetings. I try to make sure that the technical issues are being dealt with by the engineers, and that the documentation issues are being dealt with by the Fedora documentation team. Things like that. It's really just about benchmarking, identifying problems, identifying areas where progress needs to be made and whatever sort of aspect of the Fedora project that is, figuring that stuff out, sort of planning and putting into plans how we can fix that, identifying leaders, making sure that people know what they're trying to do and what they're empowered to do, and then sort of watching the results and seeing how things go, and then you go back to the beginning and sort of try to identify the problems. So that's sort of the view I take on my job. I mean, the actual mechanism for it is a lot of email, a lot of seeing, a few face-to-face meetings is necessary, but obviously they are necessary, and sort of just trying to keep an eye on all the different sort of moving parts at once.
So then, two questions then. So what you're saying is you kind of evolved or moved from doing a lot of technical work into management and into more of a managerial role and leadership role. And when you say that you look to delegate leadership amongst different people that are working on different projects, do you mean in conjunction with that leadership involves responsibility? So you're looking for somebody not only to take the role, but to be responsible for making sure that whatever it is gets done.
Absolutely. I think more than anything else, the type of people that I enjoy working with and the type of person I try to be in a group of people working on something is, and maybe I'm a simplistic person, but I like to know what the tasks are that are being worked on. I like to know the single person who is ultimately accountable for those tasks. I think, and I haven't been in the industry for 20 years or anything like that. I'm only 26 years old, but in the experience that I have, I have seen that when there isn't something that has a clearly identified owner, no matter what, we're not even talking about computers anymore, now we're just being metaphysical. When there isn't something that has a clearly defined owner, that usually is a sign that it's not going to end up going very well. And when it comes to the Fedora project, from Red Hat's perspective, clearly defined owner is me, but obviously I can't do it all myself. And so the other leaders who are the technical leaders, Jeremy Katz is a Fedora developer. He's been an open source developer forever. He sits on the Fedora project board. He is the technical lead for Fedora. If he was on this call, that AIGLX question, I would have deferred to him because he'd be able to answer it. Instead, I'm going to have to go talk to him tomorrow. So it's about making sure that things have owners, people who are able, from a talent perspective and a resource perspective, to get things done, helping them do it, and figuring out what's falling through the cracks and picking that up. I don't know. It sounds so obvious to be saying it, but I feel like I'm just rambling, so I'm going to stop.
How difficult, or have you found it difficult to basically hold somebody accountable and responsible for completion of a project or project goals, if it's, they're not getting paid? Has that been an issue? The only recognition they're getting is being part of the community, being part of the project. Has you seen that as being any problems with that, or has that worked out without being an issue of accountability?
That's a great question. I think we touched on it a little bit earlier when we were talking about the different sorts of contributions that community volunteers are more likely to make versus the kind of contributions to an open source project that paid developers are more likely to make. I think the people who have stepped up and stood out in the Fedora community as leaders, and I can name a few names and I'm going to forget a bunch of others, but someone like Thomas Chung, who runs FedoraNews.org, no one from Red Hat, no one from the Fedora project ever asked him to do this. He started doing it by himself because he was interested in Fedora. He wanted to make a contribution. He started doing it. He's a major player now in Fedora Ambassadors, which is sort of the group that handles putting together and running all the Fedora shows and the Fedora presence at different shows like Linux World and things like that. We've got community developers who maintain packages for Fedora extras. These people accomplish things because in a sense, they self-select themselves, right? Someone who is going to get that much responsibility and involvement in an open source project is only going to get there by consistently delivering. That's the beauty of the meritocracy of open source that we all work in and we all love. So the responsible people and the people who want to see it get done and the dedicated people are going to get stuff done regardless, because the satisfaction that comes out of doing it is all that is needed. The place where it gets difficult is when you've got people who, you get a lot of people who come with a lot of enthusiasm to a project, and they want to contribute, but they don't necessarily know what that's going to mean. And so they take on some responsibility, and they volunteer for tasks. And it's about mentoring, really, and helping people. It's about helping people meet the things that they volunteered for, and then getting the pride that comes out of having accomplished it. And I think that's how you sort of deal with that sort of an issue.
Well, one of the listeners on the RC had a question regarding the one laptop per child project that Fedora was picked as a distribution that's going to run on that. And those machines are very low-powered, low-end type machines. Are you familiar what you guys are doing to slim down Fedora for that?
The one laptop per child program?
Yeah.
Chris Blizzard, who works for Red Hat, he's on the, either is or was on the board of the Mozilla Foundation, I believe. He is basically within Red Hat the guy regarding one laptop per child, and I think he would probably love to do this show, and I would love to put you guys in touch with him, because really, he could talk for an hour about that, and it would, every minute of it would be brilliant.
Yeah, if you could
Sounds great.
Set that up, that'd be great. And
yeah, definitely, I'll ping him.
So now, you obviously, is Fedora the distribution you use?
And, it's on my laptop. It's on my desktop.
Is your fan...
Prior to coming to... Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead, finish what you're saying. I'll get to that.
Prior to coming to Red Hat, obviously when working at Red Hat, it was much easier to use Red Hat distribution, since I started Red Hat working on Red Hat Network, and it sort of makes sense. I was a Slackware guy. For my entire Linux life until I started at Red Hat, and now I use Fedora. So, but anyway, that's neither here nor there. What was your question?
Do you have? Is your family using Fedora?
no, they're not. And then the next question is, why are they not?
No. You know what? Why aren't they? Why aren't they using Fedora?
The oh, my parents are going to listen to this later on. Well, my dad had the work that he does. His whole company is a Windows company, and it just isn't an option for him. And my mother, I love her dearly, and she's a wonderful person, but she's a Windows user, and that is what she's comfortable with. And she lives far away, and it would be. It would be too hard to be the tech support guy for that sort of a change, given the logistics of it. So that's basically why.
It's understandable. I have a hell of a time trying to get my dad to run it.
Got them using Firefox, though, so I consider that a partial victory.
Now, Fedora Core 5, it's real slick. When I tried it out, it was real nice. I was pretty impressed with it.
It comes.
Me personally, I'm a KDE user, but I tried GNOME, and I really like how you guys implemented GNOME the last release. It looked really nice.
But?
I'm sorry, I'm not really catching what you're saying there.
Oh, Pat was just praising Fedora, saying how nice it was.
Carry on.
He was going off about how he prefers KDE, but you guys did a nice job on the GNOME interface. And
well, we have the KDE packages in there and Fedora extras as well. So he could use those. And that brings me to an interesting topic, if I might hijack the conversation for a moment, which is I hope that down the road, I'm guessing it's definitely not Fedora 6, but kind of, you know, post Fedora Core 6, I'm hoping we can get to a place where the customizability is much easier, and it'll be almost trivial for someone to go in and say, I want Fedora with this or that, and whether as a desktop or whatever other sort of custom sort of builds of Fedora someone would want, and that they could take packages from anywhere within the Fedora universe. If you think of Fedora Core and Fedora Extras, which is one big pile of packages, I hope we get to the point as soon as possible where people can sort of just pick and choose from that and roll sort of their own Fedora for whatever they want to do. But that's a pretty massive undertaking, but that's, you know, long-term wishful thinking. And we're talking about it, but it's going to be a baby steps kind of thing.
That's cool. Now, one of the downsides I hear about Fedora is, why is Yum so slow?
I like Yum. I don't know. Seth Vidal is the guy who wrote Yum, and he's also on the Fedora Project board. I will refer your question to him. I think Yum is great. I use it, obviously. I don't find it too slow for my needs, but maybe other people do, and that's certainly fine. So I delicately dance aside your question.
Duck and run. Because, I mean, that's about the only negative thing I hear about Fedora.
It's real nice Fedora Core.
And that's the only thing everybody I can't say everybody, but people that I've talked to have said it's great. They wish Yum was a little faster, but aside from that, it's really great.
Well, I can only assume that the guys working on Yum, much like the guys working on any package manager, are probably trying to make it faster all the time. But I'm glad you guys like it. I think, I honestly think it's great. I think Fedora Core 5 is the best Fedora we've had so far, and I think we've made a ton of progress, just in the sense of Fedora really starting to find its stride and be comfortable with itself. There was a lot of confusion a couple of years ago, you know, back in 2003 when, Red Hat Linux was stopped and Red Hat Enterprise Linux started and Fedora started alongside of it to, you know, fill that same path sort of as the old Red Hat Linux. And there was a lot of confusion, and I think we've long since emerged from all that, and we've got a real structure in place for Fedora to continue to grow and to grow in a way that the decisions are being made by the community. We have open source community members not employed by Red Hat at the highest levels of decision making in Fedora, and those decisions are made openly and transparently. And I think that alone is a really it's not insignificant. I think. So
you talked about looking towards the future of Fedora, more customizability. Any other big things that you guys are looking to like really tackle?
Stateless is a really big deal for us, both in the Fedora world and throughout Red Hat. Stateless leads directly to live CD, which I think we desperately need for Fedora. Getting that knocked out is something that I hope happens. I don't know. I can't say for sure if that's going to be done in time for Fedora Core 6 or not. I hope we can get it there. But that is big on the list. Virtualization continues to be something we're going to do a lot of work in for Fedora and RHEL both. Those are kind of the big ticket things coming to mind right now.
What about the installation media? I know that they were handing out Fedora Core DVDs, and I guess the install disks, there's a set of 5 of them, I think. How many disks do you actually need to install Fedora?
Well, the And our BitTorrent tracker has obviously the DVD, which has everything on it. And I think if you download the CD set, it is 5. I am not sure if the CD number 1 is a self-contained sort of minimal install or not. I don't want to say that it is when I can't say 100%. But it might be. It very well might be.
All right. Because I like the one CD mini install and let me... Well, there you go. The customization coming down the pike. Maybe that'll do it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I instead of me wasting all that time downloading 5 CDs or the one DVD, I'll waste the time afterwards downloading the individual packages.
Yeah. Do the minimal install and then download everything.
Yeah, well, and that's... Just to throw in a plug for a community project, Fedora project that I think is fantastic work that these guys have done. Led by a guy named Bob Jensen, the Fedora Unity Project, they call themselves. What they have done is they have taken and produced and stuck out there on BitTorrent, basically Fedora Core 5 respins. They let their first one out about a week and a half ago, where they took FC5, they took all of the updates that you'd have gotten through that point in time, and if you were just sort of consistently running yum update on your box, and they respun that and into a DVD ISO and tested it, and so now even new people coming to Fedora don't have to get FC5 from March 20th and then immediately download 3 months of updates. They can get one from 2 weeks ago, and that's pretty cool. So I was really excited about that just because it's something that's been needed for Fedora, and it's a superb example of open source innovation the way it should be. Right? These people had an itch they wanted to scratch. They were able to get it done and get the help they needed, and voila, there you go. For the love of the game, so to speak.
Yeah, that is great. That is great. And it's ironic that Alan over here is suspiciously silent through this interview.
Sorry, I'm just silent tonight.
See, Alan is still a Slackware user.
So
like I said, I was a Slackware user for a long time.
I still
buy the discs every release just because I want to support them.
You know, I hear that more and more, because I'm supposed to be on a subscription service, too, and I love Slackware. But it seems like a lot of people may not be running Slackware, but they're still supporting it. And it's got to say something about the distro.
It just works very well for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the work that Pat does continues to just astound me. And so, I'll plunk down whatever, $30, $35 bucks a couple times a year to support that. Absolutely.
So now, are you, other things that you might be using Linux-wise on your desktop, are you using GNOME or are you KDE or a different window manager?
I'm on GNOME. I take the default that Fedora gives me. I use that. I'm a terminal guy mostly, so for me, a terminal. The window manager and desktop for me is kind of a background thing. 90% of what I do is either a terminal, a web browser, or IRC. So I don't really care as much as other people do of which desktop environment I happen to be using.
So what IRC client do you prefer?
I use XChat.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
XChat, GNOME Terminal, and Firefox.
I know,
with ad block.
Yeah, I know there's... Terminals can be
And what more do you need?
You need IRSSI and a screen session, so you never lose your connection to the IRC server, no matter where you are in the world.
All right.
Yeah. So, what's the best Fedora IRC channel? Or server and channel to be on?
Definitely. On IRC, you're going to want to get on Freenode and go in pound Fedora, pound Fedora-devel, start in one of those two places. Pound Fedora is kind of the general one. FedoraProject.org is our main website, and on there you'll also find a list of all the Fedora mailing lists, all the Fedora IRC channels. So if you're listening and you're a Fedora user and you've never known about FedoraProject.org and you want to get involved, head over there and you will find what you need. And also, people can feel free. I love getting email. I try to answer all the email that I get from people out in the community who are Fedora users who want to send me something. I don't always answer it immediately, but I try to answer it eventually. And you can email me as well, and my email address is on fedoraproject.org. You'll find it.
Now, Max, we hear a lot about, the community aspect of a lot of these distributions and volunteer support and involvement. What type of involvement are you looking from the community? I mean, what could somebody get involved with right now? What kind of niches do you have that need to be filled on the Fedora Core project that you're looking for?
Mm-hmm. From developers, the Fedora Extras project needs a lot of help. There are packages that are trying to be made ready for Fedora Extras that have to go through our packaging guidelines and get put together in the correct way. Help to get those things through the process is always needed. From the non-technical side, if you are someone in especially non-USA who is a Fedora user who wants to be what we call Fedora ambassador, we are in need of people like you, people who can be the Fedora presence, different shows around the world that someone like me, who's sitting in Raleigh, go Canes, by the way, can't get to. Obviously, I can't spend my whole life flying around on airplanes. So we try to empower the Fedora community and lugs in different and universities in different countries and cities worldwide to be able to represent Fedora at a show and put on an event of Fedora with Red Hat support and whatnot. We try to make it possible for people to do that without someone from Red Hat having to be involved. That's 100% community run. What else do we need? We have a series of sort of one-off coding projects that need some help. Our Fedora infrastructure team, our Fedora websites team, all have different things that need to be done, and especially testing as well. We always would love anybody who wants to use Fedora and can write up a good bug report or get on IRC and find people whose focus is testing Fedora. Working with them is something that we need a lot of help with as well. So if there's someone out there who wants to contribute, get in touch with us, get in touch with me, and when we can talk a little more individually about what your sort of skills and time and what you're hoping to get out of being part of an open source project is, and find something to do, because like I said before, that's really the way to build a successful community is to kind of mentor people along, and then everybody benefits.
What about documentation?
The docs team needs help as well. Fedora docs, we have a lot of work going on there. The release, the sort of release summary press release for Fedora Core 5, I was very happy that it was community written. It's put together by the community. We're going to keep doing that, and there's all sorts of other docs that need to be written. We just need people to write them. So, yeah.
Excellent. Max, I want to thank you for coming on and talking about Fedora and your involvement in the project. It's some really good stuff.
Guys. I enjoyed the hour, and I hope that maybe 6 months from now we can do it again.
Well, definitely.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I hope so, too, because we're really looking forward to Fedora Core 6. And
all right, well, late September, early October, somewhere around there, we'll probably have it out, and I'll catch up with you then.
Yeah, that'd be great. So you guys, you shooting for 6-month release cycles?
Pardon me?
You guys are shooting for like 6 month release cycles, right?
We try to hit a 6 month release cycle, but like all other projects, we reserve the right to slip it a little bit if that means we're going to be able to have it be better quality and yada yada yada. So,
all right.
But we sort of shoot for every 6 months. Yep.
Great. Now, you know, let me ask you one quick question about updating Fedora. I know a lot of distributions would recommend that when you get a new release that comes out that you download the new release and just reinstall the whole thing over mm-hmm. top of your existing system. Now, I personally prefer to just change whatever package manager I'm using the version to the next one. What do you guys recommend on the Fedora project? Do you recommend a complete reinstall, or is it just as easy to upgrade?
We provide an upgrade path. The fact is that how well or early that works in some cases depends on what new features are coming into Fedora. From what I understand, the Fedora Core 4 to Fedora Core 5 upgrade is pretty good. But if you were to go back in time and look at something like, hopefully I won't get my versions too messed up, but whichever Fedora existed pre-LVM and the first Fedora release that we put in that had LVM, right? If you do an upgrade there, you're not going to be able to take advantage of LVM. So the only way you're going to be able to do that is if you do a reinstall. So it's a matter of sort of understanding what you might not get by doing an upgrade as opposed to a new install. But ideally, I would hate to tell someone who wants to do an upgrade, so you have to do a new install because upgrade just doesn't work. That's not a good answer. So we try to avoid that one.
And one last question from the RC Max. One of the listeners wants to know, do you plan on keeping the Blue Curve theme in KDE?
Could someone repeat that?
Yeah, Pat was asking a question that an IRC person on IRC wants to know. Is whether you guys are going to be sticking with the Blue Curve theme, or is that going to evolve into something else, or you guys drop that, or is Blue Curve the way you're going to go?
I think as far as I know, we're sticking with the kind of Fedora logo, the voice, infinite freedom and voice sort of logo that you see on Fedora Core 5 and the theme that goes along with that. We might tweak it a little bit, but I don't think there's any plans to change it in any real way.
And he could change it himself if he wants to.
Exactly.
Yep.
Lazy bastard.
Very, very true.
Max, thanks a lot. I mean, we appreciate you coming on. And I know a lot of people really excited about hearing from the Fedora guys.
Yeah, anytime, guys. I'm really happy to do it, and we will catch up again soon. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you. Have a good week.
Thank you.
All right. I'll hang out on IRC for a little bit. Talk to you later.
Oh, great. Bye-bye. Great. Bye.
That was Max from the Fedora Core Project. Good interview. Those guys are doing fantastic work. We really like Fedora Core. Hopefully they keep it up.
Except for Alan.
Here, here.
Bastard.
Well, he's hardcore.
Except for
slack.
Me what? Except for me what?
I don't know. Why won't it let me close?
No, I liked Fedora Core. I just, for some reason, I just decided to go back to Slack. I just wanted to go. Once you go Slack, you never go back. What can I say?
Well, that's obviously not true. He went from Slack to Fedora, and
that's not entirely true.
Pat went from Slack to everything else in the
universe.
Well,
I happen to like it. It works perfectly fine for what I'm doing, so I happen to like it.
You got to try Smart Package on that. Let me know how it works.
On what, Slackware?
Yeah, Slackware.
Oh, it's all about the Smart Package Manager.
It's really nice, Smart.
But you're forgetting I'm the person who likes to compile.
That's right, you're masochist. Then maybe Gen2 is your distro. We're talking to them
next
week.
No, I don't want to compile forever.
We're talking to the Gen2 crew next week. Should be good. It's all good, man. You know, we got all these distros, man. Try what try them all out and see what you like. Hopefully you find one that matches, you know, what your needs are.
Well, that's exactly what I did. I was Red Hat for a long time, then I went Debian for a while.
I was Red Hat in the beginning, too. I think we all were Red Hat in the beginning, right? Right, Dan? You were Red Hat in the beginning, right?
Actually, I was Red Hat when we started the show until you guys beat it out of me.
Yeah, I went from Red Hat to SUSE, to Red Hat, to SUSE, to Slackware. And after that, it was like a big, long plateau.
And then it was Debian and Ubuntu.
Debian, Ubuntu.
Arch.
Arch. No, it was Debian, Slack, Ubuntu, Arch. Yeah.
I went from Red Hat.
Canonix was in there, too, for a little bit.
I went with Red Hat, Slackware, Debian. What else?
Canonix.
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 Canonix. Canonix. Canonix.
SUSE. Ubuntu. I'm running. I mean, right now I'm running.
You had Linspire for a while, didn't you?
Well, I did a review of it. I had it running for just maybe a couple days.
What are you running now?
I'm running Debian, Ubuntu, and SUSE.
Dun, dun, dun.
Changing up gears. What do you guys think of Google Earth, man?
I love it.
They released a Linux native package built on the Qt toolkit, man. I'm impressed, man.
It is nice.
It's real nice.
It's a little buggy, though. I've had it crash on me.
Yeah, some people said that they had crashes on AMD 64. Somebody.
What's your font size like in that? Mine's like micro.
I don't know off the top of my head. I could take a look. I got it running on my my workstation, which is running SUSE 10.1, and it works pretty well. Because that's where my NVIDIA graphics card is. So,
I've got it running at work on the on my Linux box at work because
look
it's
at the,
pretty
look
much
at the
all
size
it's
of
do.
Font. The font size on my system over there. I mean, it's really
you got like super tiny font. Over
I know,
here.
And I'm trying to figure out how I can change that. I get that
but
same
I've had,
issue
like,
in
no
Firefox.
Problem. I've had no problem with it.
You might not want to run it now, Dan, because it's a little bit of a network hog. If you want to keep the stream going, you might not want to run it.
Right, but. It's not. I. You know what? I give them props.
It's
I give
nice.
Them props
it's a real nice program.
And credit. This is better. Even though it's buggier, it's better than I think.
Than a wine port, wine thing.
Than the Picasa. Yeah. I like it better than Picasa because it is native.
It's native. Yeah.
And I'm not too keen on the license on it, but hey, I understand. I like it. I'm happy that it is finally. You know. I'm wondering what their next project that they're going to start releasing is going
to
be.
Well, we're talking to Chris DeBona on July 5th.
That'd be cool to see, like, Sketch come over to Linux 2. But I really...
Well, it just went, what was it, Universal for the Mac, right?
Sketch? I think so. Yeah. I haven't tried it on Mac yet. I know they were working on it, but I haven't tried it on OS X. I tried running Google Earth under Wine. And it was just, it was a mess.
It doesn't really work that way.
But, I do. I really, it's Google Earth, you know? You just fly around and look at stuff, you know? You check out
Although
your house.
I'm pissed because my house is under the, if you go like outside of Easton there, there's a couple of spots there just like.
Blur.
Yeah, my house is under the blob.
Me too.
I can see my house.
I saw my parents' house.
Yeah.
I saw my house, my parents' house.
The images are old. That's the thing. Who knows how old they are?
Well, I know. I would assume that the images from my parents' house
tend to run
a year to two years
behind. Yeah,
2 to 3 years old. The maps that they use, Google Maps and Yahoo Maps. Those maps are like 3 or 4 years old too. Because I've had
but a lot of the Yahoo ones are much newer than the Google Earth ones.
Okay, but I know that from I tried doing directions. Like, this is one road across from
the roads that don't exist anymore.
Well, no, it's a road that exists that they made. They paid. It used to be it's down where I work off of 378. There's a road that used to dead end, but now it goes straight through to DeSales University. That was about 3 or 4 years ago they built it. But every map so far, because there's an athletic field down there that one of the teams plays on, and I'm trying to get directions that would go there. And every map has them go all the way around the big loop and come back because none of them have that road as completed yet.
But it's still fun.
Yeah, I know. I like it. You go down there to Red Square.
Yep. Zoom
Russia.
Around.
Very cool stuff, man.
Yeah. It's pretty neat. It's so cool to be able to like zoom, fly in and out.
Rotate.
Yeah.
There's a couple of like the ones that like they've done flyover ones in like Africa where you can actually like see people looking up at you. They've done like just plane flyovers and they impose or superimpose those in when you zoom around.
So you'll zoom into an area, and all of a sudden it gets really, really clear, like twice as clear. And you look down, you see there's like these people waving up at you.
Oh, wow.
As the plane goes by, yeah.
Neat. I'll have to look out for that. You know, it'd be cool if they had, what is it, Rylai, where Cthulhu is living. But I couldn't find that.
Cthulhu.
Cthulhu, yeah. And, you know, speaking of that, you guys have used Celestia, right?
Yes.
And
not in a while, but
they
yes.
have Star Wars plugins for that, and Star Trek. Supposedly they have like a whole Star Wars movie thing that you can watch, but I haven't gotten it to work properly yet when I was playing around with it. But it's something that might be interesting to check out. You know what else I'd like to cover? But go ahead, Pat. You were about to say something.
We definitely got to ask Chris DeBona these questions because he's one of the main Linux guys over at Google. So
is he next week?
No, he's July 5th. Next week we're talking to the Gen 2 project guys.
Oh, yeah.
And then the week after that we have a listener call-in episode. And then the week after that is when we have Chris on, I believe.
Awesome. What, Cthulhu is on Google Earth? I'll have to look that up. You know what?
He's going to do it now and sap up all the
bandwidth.
Yeah,
there goes the bandwidth. The stream is about to crawl.
Do the shout-outs before we lose
no,
the
No,
stream.
I'm not going to do that right now. I'm going to look at that. Speaking of Ubuntu installs, I upgraded my wife's laptop, and that failed miserably.
Did it really?
And I'm not sure what's Ubuntu...
Stink pad?
No, it's a gateway. It's a gateway. It's unfortunate because this is the gateway that used to be a Dell, and it was the hard drive I pulled out and just kept moving it up to the
gateway that used to be a Dell.
Right. You know, when the hardware okay. fell apart on the Dell. I went from like one Dell system to another and then popped the hard drive into a gateway.
Okay.
So actually, no, wait a minute. It was Dell, gateway, and this is the latest. This is the second gateway.
Dell, gateway, Dell.
Yeah. Anyway. What had happened was I just changed the sources file to point to Dapper instead of Breezy. Did the app get dist upgrade, and it went to town. And the next morning, what's a pain in the ass about it though is like it had to download like 2 gigs worth of stuff.
It takes a while, yeah.
Took a long time, but then you just let it go and you come back and you realize, well, you don't know how long it's been sitting on that menu option choice there. It's like, well, this new configuration.
Do you want to update it? Yeah, you know, or keep the existing one.
Yeah, so, you know, I went through all that. I rebooted the machine, and right off the bat, I rebooted the machine. It came back up, and right off the bat, I started having problems. Network wasn't working. I could not get the wireless working. I initially had it working perfectly with NDIS wrapper. I went through the process of reconfiguring the NDIS wrapper, still having a problem. Couldn't even get the Ethernet card in there working. Everything else seemed to be doing okay, really? But just no network whatsoever. I tried getting rid of the BCM43X module that kept loading. Nothing I would do would resolve this problem. I rebooted the machine, and that's when it started getting worse. I started getting inode errors and not being able to read certain sectors on the hard drive. So it looked like the hard drive was failing, and it was really ugly at that point. It wasn't working out. It was running the SCK, and it took like forever, so I rebooted it again into... because I knew at the point that it was done running that disk check, it was going to dump me out and say, you know, you need to provide the root password.
We can't fix anything here.
You need to fix it manually. So I just decided to go right in and run level one and fix it manually myself. And that took... I started that up and then went out to dinner and, I don't know, something came back a little bit later and was finished, but it was still, the network and everything else was hosed. So the only thing I had left to do was to wipe it out and reinstall
it. Start over again, yeah.
I did the disk upgrade on this, and for the most part, it works pretty well. The only issues I had were some of my settings were like, you know, reset by default, and my virtual desktops disappeared on my toolbar. Other than that, though, everything works pretty much.
Yeah, and I reinstalled it. Now, of course, my preference always separate home from the rest of your file system. If you're not going to do, you know, extended files partitioning, I always have a separate home so that if I would need to wipe out my distribution or whatever happens, I don't lose any of my home stuff. I can just wipe out everything else, keep my home partition. And I did that for my wife. And, you know, it's an older system. It's a P3 something. And about 45 minutes, it was back up, you know, at full install of Ubuntu, ready to go. And then I just used Synaptic to get all the other packages that she runs, a Kubuntu desktop, which she prefers, and all that other stuff. So in a few hours, I had it back up to exactly where it was before, and better, because it was running, it's running a little snappier, and network is actually working. And this is a problem I see time and time again. If you have a card that uses the Broadcom chipset, particularly under Ubuntu, the newest kernel has semi-support for certain Broadcom chipsets using the BCM43XX module. And if that thing's loading in and your card's not working, it's going to prevent any other, you know, workaround that you try from working, like NDS wrapper or something else. And you actually have to blacklist that in the etsy modprobe.d directory under the blacklist file. If you blacklist that and then reboot the machine, which is the easiest thing, it doesn't load that module in, so it won't interfere if you're going to run NDIS wrapper or something else to get the card working. So once I did that, and they make it really, there's a great configuration tool out there called NDIS, or is it GTK-NDIS wrapper, or NDIS-GTK, which provides a
Never had to run it, so I don't know.
Well, it provides a GTK interface for like choosing the Windows driver to load in, and where it is. You pick it, and it loads it in automatically for you, and then allows you to go in and configure the rest of your card. I mean, it was a really, really great package there. It was really nice. It was a lot nicer than doing it manually.
Well, I think Nopix uses that, because I was trying to get that up on a T60 today without much luck at all, but... Although Ubuntu did say that it found the card, so I'll find out tonight whether or not it actually finds the network when the guy goes home. But
yeah, and I had that again. I had that thing where it would find a card, but it wasn't supported under the BCM43XX driver. I actually had to use something else to get it running. Happy days are here again.
Happy days.
Are you running Ubuntu? Have you tried? Have you checked whether the exporting of, like, a photo album in Digicam or whatever it is to a video file is working in Ubuntu? You know, like it wasn't working in
yeah, slideshow, like a DVD slideshow.
Yeah, yeah, and it would bomb out because of that PPM to Ed.
I gotta try that.
Because I know it used to work in Ubuntu, and I haven't tried it on any of my machines. I
haven't tried it. I'll check it out.
Because it's still not working under Arch. And the latest versions of Digicam and all that. And again, I think it comes back to the interface or the change in the library for, what is it? Is it no, not M encoder. What changed? It wasn't Digicam, but it was a...
It's the library that it was.
It was some library that it depended on that changed. I don't know. Do we have shout-outs? Frappership map shout-outs?
Hell yes.
Do we have a song for this week?
I got one on the server. If you want to copy it down while I go through the Frapper shout-outs.
Now you're a man.
Now it's called Frozen. If you look at my directory on your server.
All right.
It's in my home directory. Let me do the Frapper shout-outs. We've got Murph from Booton, New Jersey. We've got John from Springfield, Missouri. We've got Neil D. from Key West, Florida. We've got John Krasulak from Hobart, Tasmania, Australia. We've got Patrick from Lafayette, Louisiana. We've got Kyle Millett from Kitchener, Ontario, Canada. We've got Christian St. Cyr from Lowell, Mass. We've got Downer from Fork River, New Jersey. And we've got Chris Maggs from Swansea, Wales, United Kingdom. And we got a couple more. We got Seema from Aarhus, Jutland, Denmark. We've got Dustin from Safety Harbor, Florida. And that's our Frapper Map shout-outs for this week. So next week we got the Gen 2 guys coming on. That should be a good interview. We got a whole crew from them, actually. I think we got like 2-3 guys from there coming on. So that should be good. And in 2 weeks we got our listener call-in episode. If anybody's interested in coming on, what I'm going to do is I'm going to put a post in the bulletin board. If anybody's interested, add yourself to the list. And I'll contact you, and then we'll call you the day of the show, and we'll do you one after the other. Depending on how many people want to come on, you know, you'll have between 5 and 15 minutes to talk about anything you like, rant, yell at us, tell Dan to get his shit together, whatever you want. Yell at Alan for being too quiet during the shows. Tell me I got marbles in my mouth. Whatever your heart desires, you can come on and tell us. So that'll be in 2 weeks. And keep a lookout on the bulletin boards for that posting regarding that. And that's pretty much it. Alan, you got anything to say for yourself right now?
No. 3 minutes to go. Play us out, Dan.
Bless you, Dan.
Murph is the guy from the lug meeting. I was talking about a lug meeting last night.
Yes.
Who, I think he was the one who brought up the not myth. Or was it his friend who brought it up? About the whole not myth and the guy being interested in putting together. You know. I don't know. Who's Frozen? Give us a little history on Frozen.
That's Cell Dweller. This is another song from Cell Dweller. This song is not free software. I mean, free music. It's they're a signed group. They're on a small independent label, and I actually wrote them to get permission for the play, the music, and they were kind enough to let us play any song from their albums. So, I think the last time we played their songs, we played Switchback was one song, which you might have heard actually on TV or on a movie somewhere. I've heard that song used in different shows and stuff. And we also played, I forget what the other song that we played, but this is a song called Frozen. And it's a good tune, man. It's kind of got like a Nine Inch Nails kind of vibe to it. It's good stuff. So,
all right.
Just check it out, and we'll catch you next week, everybody.
Yeah, we're actually closing up on time here.
Good
Thanks
night.
Thanks a lot. Boo, 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 boo.
Good night.
Inside this fantasy, it seems so real to me. Synthetic ecstasy when her legs are open. True life behind the wall, where men and angels fall. A fading memory when my mind is frozen.
Inside this fantasy, it seems so real to me. Synthetic ecstasy when we're late. when my mind's frozen. Take me anywhere you wanna go. If I find anything that feels like home.
Let's go.
You're the only one I wanna be.
It's here and now. Now it's only you and me.
It's never enough.
That's true.
I wanna stay here.
Yeah, and I do too.
Breaking it down.
Taking it down.
Smell, touch, taste, sight, and sound.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush.
Shut up. Just shut up. It's over.